Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on July 1st, Sunday, 2012. This is episode 888. Ooh, that's lucky. Episode 888. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by GoToAssist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support to all your users from anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com. Use a promo code TECH. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk tech. Otherwise, I'd be the gardening guy, right? 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number if you want to join us. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. Lots of listeners on the Internet. Hello, Internet. Outside the U.S., if you're listening outside the U.S., you can still use that toll-free number. Just use something like Skype out to call it, and it won't cost you anything. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. Wow, there's a lot to talk about this week in the tech news. I like to start the show talking a little bit about what happened and what it means and all of that stuff. And we talked, last show, we talked about Google I.O. and Google's announcements. They have a new $200 tablet to compete with the Kindle Fire. It's very nice. I've been playing with it, and impressive, fast. A little bit of a dim screen, oddly enough. Maybe that's because I'm spoiled by the Galaxy S3, which has a super bright screen, or even the iPad, which has a brighter screen than this new. It's called the Nexus 7. But at $200, and Google says, we're not making any money on this, kids. This is cost. You're getting a pretty impressive tablet. No 3G, but that's good because no contract. It uses Wi-Fi. And nowadays, I think it's probably fair to say most people are within Wi-Fi access range at some point during the day, if not most of the time. It's going to be a great product. Now, they also announced something called the Nexus Q? I know it's the Q. If you go to play.google.com, that's their store, and look at devices, you could see all three of the things they showed at the Google I.O. The Galaxy Q is a ball with LEDs around it. They call it the world's first social streaming media player. I don't know why anybody would want this at all. $300. Doubt they'll sell any. I don't even understand the point of it. CNET gave it 2.5 stars. That's generous. It doesn't work with anything. I'm hearing lots of people saying it doesn't work at all. So don't worry yourself about it. I'll let you know if there's something there, but there isn't right now. So then they had a very interesting keynote in which one of their founders, Sergey Brin, led a team that jumped out of a Zeppelin over the conference center in San Francisco, Moscone Center, landed on the roof of Moscone Center, then handed off and they were shot the whole thing, by the way, in a Google Hangout, because Google Plus big on these Hangouts, right, where you have, you know, up to, I think, 9 people in a room at the same time with video. And then, so they're all the people diving out, and they're using these Google glasses to shoot video as they dive through the air. Of course, they then later showed that in order for this to work, they had to have parabolic, 3-foot-wide parabolic antennas with sighting scopes and humans aiming at the divers so they could keep the internet connection as they went down. And then when they got down, they handed off the Google glasses to some trick cyclists who jumped off a ramp and did flippity-floops. And then they handed it off to a guy who rappelled down the side of Moscone Center, you know, with ropes and belays, and zzz, 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 rappelled down the side. We handed it off to more bicyclists who then, at breakneck speed, rode through the crowd, pushing people aside as they went. It looked kind of scary, to be honest. But still, we're seeing it from first person the whole time because they've got these Google glasses on, and then they ride up to the stage and they jump off. And there's Sergey Brin. Look at that. What an amazing, an amazing thing. I've never seen anything like it in a keynote, to be honest. I do remember Richard Branson of Virgin getting stuck on wires flying down from the ceiling. It's the only other thing that's even close. And it was kind of a flop. He kind of swung there for a while. Very impressive. But it didn't really tell us anything about the Google Glasses. This is the Project Glass, they call it. It's this thing you wear on your head. You could have your spectacles attached, but you don't have to. Or as Sergey had sunglasses on, or it could just be a kind of a Geordi style bar across your forehead with a little heads up display that you look into. I don't know if it's projecting on your eye. We don't know anything about it because nobody's worn it. Except for Lieutenant Governor of California, Gavin Newsom, for some reason, he has a TV show. And Sergey brought it and let him wear it. But no tech journalist has ever worn this for good reason. It probably doesn't work. And they showed was it takes pictures and video. That's it. We don't even know how or what. So there you go. Not exactly dynamite killer products. Not like the, you know... Interesting, but you know, this is Google. What are they? They don't make their money on hardware. They make their money on you using their internet stuff because they want to show you ads. Speaking of ads, Facebook got on people's radar this week. You should check your Facebook account. Apparently, they changed not everybody because it didn't happen to me, but many people's email addresses. They changed it without asking you, without letting you know to @facebook.com, huh? What? Now, I'm looking at mine, and I still have the old, my real email address. But then if I edit my email addresses, I could see that they've got one for me, leoglaporte@facebook.com. And I guess for some people, and maybe you can tell me if this happened to you, some people, this actually became their primary email address. And if you're using a phone, like an iPhone or an Android phone, that automatically gets contact information from Facebook, as many of us do, I do, the fear is, and I think this is the case, that in many cases, your real email address got wiped out by a Facebook email address, all without your permission, all without any say-so, just Facebook just did it. That's not nice. You might want to check your Facebook. Go to your Facebook timeline, and where it says about, click about, and see what your email address is. What address it gives for your email address. Oh, yeah, mine's, yeah, yep. It is. It's Facebook.com. Look at here. They just changed that since this morning. You little dogs. You little devil dogs. So you can fix that by taking it off, saying, just go to the settings, edit the contact info, and say, no. No. I don't want you to see that. Make it hidden from timeline, and I guess then you won't have it won't appear, and don't make it public, and then it won't appear. But I guess the defaults are just put it on the timeline. You want a Facebook email, don't you? Why would they do that? Well, you know, think about it. If they can make sure that your email goes through them, then they can do what Gmail does: scan through your email looking for stuff to advertise to you, right? What is going on here? I mean, look, I understand it's a free service. We're using Facebook is a very valuable but free service. And so what they need to do is make some money off of you. That is the trade, whether it's explicit in your mind or not. That's what's going on. They're saying, here, we'll give you this cool service. You hook up with your high school friends and meet new ones and stay in touch and share pictures. Oh, all that's free. But we're going to make a little money off of you because you're going to give us that information and we'll show you ads and maybe we have some other ways of making money, which we don't know about yet. Maybe, I don't know, selling that information. I don't know. I don't know what they do with it. The problem is they keep changing the settings and there are about 8,000 settings now and you don't even, it's hard to, even Mark Zuckerberg got bit the last time they changed the privacy settings and his private pictures got published. Whoops. He didn't even understand how it works. He's the guy who wrote the stuff. And then my friend Robert Scoble got a little mad because Google, one of the things Google announced at this event is this Google I/O event is this new thing called Google Events on Google Plus where you can invite people to events. And apparently you could just invite anybody. Robert and I both got hundreds of invitations. And unfortunately, Robert's calendar was set that they all went into his calendar. Whoops. Leo Laborde, the tech guy, your call's next. Hey, we're going to get back to the Tech Guy Show in just a minute. Before we do, can I please recommend a wonderful site? You know, I'm doing IT, right, on the Tech Guy Show. And how many times have I wished, oh, if I could just reach in and fix that lady's computer, I wouldn't have to mess around so much. Wouldn't make great radio, but it sure would be better for support. That's why I tell all the support professionals I know to use GoToAssist. That's what I use. It is the market leader in remote support, has been for 10 years. It lets you do unattended support. It lets you have up to 8 sessions at once. And now GoToAssist is even better. These guys at Citrix, they're great. They just keep adding features. If you're already a GoToAssist customer, you'll find out about this soon. They've added a monitoring system. This is something they acquired recently. It's fantastic. So what do you do? Well, first of all, get GoToAssist with monitoring. Then put the crawler on your... This is for people who run IT shops, you know, who have big clients. You run the crawler on your network, right? It detects everything, hardware and software. All network-attached devices as well. Now you have this amazing inventory of everything running on your network, no matter how many seats. Then you can set up a dashboard with customized triggers for things like, you know, bad network performance, CPU load, hard drive failure, or even just full hard drives or toner cartridges are running out of toner. This way, you know what's about to go wrong before it does. You can be proactive, not reactive. And I'll tell you what, this will change your life if you're in support. It's so, so cool. You can get customized alerts via email, SMS, or instant messenger, so you're never out of touch. Quickly fix the problem with unattended support, and boom, you're good to go. Your clients will say, hey, you're amazing. How are you so good at this? Well, you don't have to tell them. It's just, I'm using GoToAssist. You can try it free for 30 days right now. Visit GoToAssist.com. Click the Try It Free button right here. And then you'll see a link. I want you to click this link that says promo code and just type in our promo code, TECH. You don't need the guy, just TECH. They'll know it's us. 30 days free. You could try both monitoring and support. Or if you haven't tried, you know, if you've been using remote support and you just want to try monitoring, check both boxes and do both. It's free for 30 days. GoToAssist.com. 30 days free when you use the offer or promo code Tech Guy. These folks at Citrix really know what they're doing. This is a very sweet system. We've got it running on our network here at the Brick House, and it's fantastic. GoToAssist.com. Try it today. Oops.
Yeah. Meet me in front of Strand Books.
What is this? Oh, I know what this is. It's the Google Glasses video. So I was told by the... Welcome back, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I was told by the chat room.
Oh, man, really?
This is the fake Google Glasses video. That some members of the press had been invited to a super secret session where they got to talk to members of the Glass team and wear the glasses. So I got all excited. I thought, wow, this is great. Went to The Verge, Joshua Topolsky, editor-in-chief. What did he say? Yeah, I got to wear the glasses. It was locked into a fireworks display. I wonder if it was playing Katy Perry at the same time. In other words, nothing. They've been very shady, if you'll forgive my, about letting people see how these operate. I don't think these Google glasses do anything but right now take pictures and video. That's it. So there you go. Sergey Brin, when he let the former mayor of San Francisco, now Lieutenant Governor of California, Gavin Newsom, wear him, say, they crap. But basically all they do is crash all the time. Well, maybe they don't want. I guess that's reasonable to not to let the members of the press actually publish that they crash all the time. I wore the Google glasses, they'll say, and they crashed all the time. That's not. They're not. They're clearly not ready for prime time. I bought one. I bought a pair. No, I did. I was allowed to. Everybody who attended Google I.O. got a rather interesting bag of swag. You got, I didn't go, but I had a ticket, so I was able to get all this stuff. I had to stay here and cover it. But they got an interesting bag of swag. They got a Galaxy Nexus phone. That's the Google Experience phone that came out last fall. Hey, it's still a free phone, $250. Then they got the Nexus 7 tablet, $200. That's nice. That's that new 7-inch tablet. Then they got the Q. That's $300. Then they got a Chrome Box, which is a Google Chrome OS computer, priced at $350, worth probably as little as the Q. So that's $450, $750. That's $1,100 worth of stuff. But then they said, get out your credit card, because we're going to let you, congratulations, buy a pair of Google Glasses.
Wow.
For $1,500. Whoa. Well, now I'm out $400. And you won't get it till next year. But they did give us a very nice piece of glass with our number etched in it. That is like our token. That we I bought it because, you know, this is my job. I got to look at this stuff. They say they won't bill me till they ship it. So I guess I'm not out any money yet. I got to look at this. I'm not Joshua Topolsky. I don't get invited into magic rooms to look at fireworks displays. I got to buy one. That's fine. I can always sell it on eBay afterwards. Behind me, you can't see it on the radio, obviously, but I'll describe. Behind me, I have a little museum of old tech stuff, like the first netbook, the Asus ePC, the first iPod, the first Google phone, the G1. The first iPhone from 2007. The first in-car MP3 player, the Rio. Remember that? And I've got a couple of Newtons and a Rubik's Cube. I got a QCAT and then one laptop per child. I've even got a vacuum tube. So I'll just put the glasses in there. It's a good place for it. 8888, ask Leo. Maybe they'll be really cool. Maybe they'll be wonderful. I'll eat my words. I'm looking forward to it. You know what I want? I want face recognition, because I'm an old man, and every time I walk up to somebody, I remember I know I've seen them before. I know I've met them, right? You know, oh, I know you. Yeah, it's right on the tip of my with a Google Glasses could recognize their face, and then say, that's George. He has two kids. Albert and Lisa, you met him at Google I.O. in 2012. They say, hey, George, how are you? There'd be this lag, though, right? And I hope it gets it right. But I'd pay to have, to wear. Oh, hi, George, how are the kids? Big Ginge in our chat room says, do they have to make that sound? Sure they do, because I'm bionic.
Music, stop.
This is the guy wearing the glasses.
Hi, what's up?
Hey.
Hey. His
girlfriend, you want to say something cool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what he's looking at.
Is that a ukulele?
Yep.
He's apparently learned to play the ukulele by wearing Google glasses.
That's beautiful.
Dr. Mom says, Leo Laporte, the $6 man. Yeah, not 6 million. You couldn't build a man for 6 million these days anyway. 6 billion maybe. Bunny Jan in Beverly Hills. Hey, Bunny Jan.
Hi. Hey, Leo.
How's everything going? Jan is a dog trainer.
Yes. My bunny web series is, I did the teaser.
Yeah, now this is exciting. But she's also a former, not playmate. That's a big distinction. She keeps her clothes on. She was a bunny at the Playboy clubs.
Yeah, back in the day.
How cool. And you're doing a... You're doing a web TV show about that?
Right. We did the teaser, and if I can plug it, that's not why I called, but babyboomerbunnies.com.
It's family friendly, right?
Oh, totally. Totally family friendly. We bleeped out any bad words.
Babyboomerbunnies. I love it. .com. So this is what happens after you leave the hutch.
Yeah. Now I got to try to sell it. I've been talking to networks, but hey.
You know, you kind of got, unfortunately, you got scooped by that bad show, the Playboy show.
It made us look like a bunch of trollops.
Yeah, trollops. And then it was a flop, so nobody's going to look at it probably anymore.
Yeah. Well, this is a sitcom, so we'll see.
Better. I like it. I'll watch the teaser. Babyboomerbunnies.com. So what can I do for you, baby boomer bunny?
I'm such a Mac person, and I'm getting the new MacBook Pro, and I have the iPad, and I have the iPhone. Anyway,
are you getting the Retina?
Yes, I am.
Good. Because I tell you, I know everybody goes, oh, it's so expensive and you can't fix it. But I'll tell you, once you start using that screen, you will never go back. Yeah. It is a life-changing experience.
My husband works for Apple, so we're waiting for that deal to come through that they give their employees.
Oh, cool.
I'm get it.
Does he work at an Apple store?
He works at an Apple store. He's a admin, genius admin.
Oh, that's cool. See, now, there was an article. I wanted to talk about this. I forgot to last Sunday. In the front page of the Sunday Times, saying how rotten that job was, that Apple underpaid its store employees. 30,000 of the 40,000 Apple employees worldwide work in stores.
Yeah, they do not pay well.
They don't pay, well, they don't pay horribly.
Well, they pay pretty bad.
This was the Times point was, Apple's making $473,000 per employee. They ought to pay them more than, $12 an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess, but I don't think the world works quite like that. It's a good thing the New York Times reporter isn't paid by what he makes the company, because he's losing them money.
Yeah, well, they do. I mean, these young kids want to work there. My husband's an
actor.
Yeah,
that's the difference, is your husband's an adult, so it's probably not. Hey, hang on. We got to take a break. Hang on.
Okay.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I tell my kids, this is a common mistake people make. Hey, well, McDonald's is making $8,000 a day on me, so they ought to pay me $3,000. No. Take it from me now, as a business owner, I finally understand this, because I had that misconception too. Your exact worth to the company is what it would cost to replace you, period. So if they can find another person who'll work for $4 an hour, they will. And guess what? They're lining up to work at the Apple store. People are dying to work at the Apple store. And if you're 21 years old, you get benefits. You get a 401k. You get a discount on Apple gear. You get what is normal in retail. And your nice blue shirt with an Apple on it. So that's how pay works. And that's why unions work, because it costs a lot more for me to replace my entire staff than it does to replace any one employee, right? Don't tell my employees that. You didn't hear that, John. No unions, okay? Thank God there's not a podcasters union. Nothing. I said nothing. Nothing. Yeah. You just see John on his desk. Union. That's why Costco employees make more, because they're unionized. There you go. Now you got it. No, Bunny Jan, they don't know what his name is. Besides, nobody from Apple listens to this show. They know I'm an apostate. I have been excommunicated from the Church of Apple. Well, I just was, I like the New York Times. I pay for it and I subscribe to it. I was baffled that they made that a front page story, to be honest, on the Sunday Times. I guess Sunday is softer. I don't know. Seems like there was other stuff, like the Supreme Court ruling on Obama's health plan. There was things they could have put on the front page. They seem to be targeting Apple. They've been doing a lot of hit pieces on Apple. How Apple sidesteps billions in taxes. So, let's see, past 7 days. Apple potato latkes with sour cream. Now, that's an Apple story I can get behind. The Apple paycheck. Oh, no, this is a response to... Long on loyalty, but short on pay. So apparently the average employee yearly makes $473,000 for Apple. But no company works that way because, as I pointed out, if they did that at the New York Times, the author of this article, poor David Segal, would owe them money. So that's not, you know, that's what's called capitalism. The person who takes the risk of building the store and hiring the employees and building the products and putting them on the shelves gets more money than the person who's standing in the store. That's just kind of how it works. But it is, of course the media should be oversight on everything. Unfortunately, it's a lot easier to be an oversight of that than why millionaires pay less taxes than they have in 80 years. That's a tougher story to do. That would be a more, I think, important story than whether Apple employees are getting paid enough. Paid more than minimum wage. In fact, a lot more.
Do you ever feel
oh, no.
like a plastic bag?
This is the stupidest song. I saw Ted yesterday, the movie by the guy who does Family Guy. And they slammed Katy Perry.
All right, to keep it going on just a little longer, Leo, yeah. We'll do it over a Carbonite billboard here.
A chance for you, because there's a spark in you. You just got to ignite the light.
I think we should play Independence Day songs all day today. Baby, you're a firework. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by Carbonite.com. It's backup done right. Visit Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo, for a 15-day free trial. Get 2 months free when you buy. Baby, you're a firework. I'm actually putting together, and I tweeted it if you want to see it, my traditional... I was asked to do the music at these events. I was talking yesterday about how in 1999, December 31st, New Year's Eve 2000, when the change of the millennium. I, of course, am the guy who does the music. So in those days, we didn't have iPods. We didn't have iTunes. We had Napster, though. I downloaded a bunch of free songs from Napster, put them on Winamp. Remember? That's what we used to play music back. And I brought my desktop computer. I mean, I had a laptop, but I for some reason, I brought the desktop computer. I think because I wanted to connect it to a projector and project the Winamp visualization on the wall, because that's what we did. And I had a playlist for New Year's Eve. So I'm doing the same thing. But now, so easy. You fire up Spotify, and everything, you know, there's 19 million songs on there. So any song you can think of is on there. And then I put together, I think it's about 54 songs, 3 hours. And then, but see, here's my secret. Spotify lets you crowdsource. Kyle Benham, our musical director, knows that. He puts a Spotify playlist up at the end of every show with all the songs he played on our website and at his Google Plus site. So I did the same thing. I put a Spotify playlist together, and I tweeted it and Facebooked it and Google Plused it and said, what am I missing? And I'm getting a lot of great suggestions for all American songs to play on Independence Day. So I'll put that Spotify. I'll give that to you the chat room, and James DeRuvo can put that in the show notes, and you can help me with it too. And so here's the thing with Spotify. Spotify is like Moog, Rhapsody, RDO. There's about a half dozen of these services. Really, Amazon and Google and Apple have similar services where. You can buy the music, but the nice thing about Spotify is you pay $10 a month for the full Spotify, and you can listen to any song. You can make a playlist on any song, and so I have the Independence Day playlist, and I, you know, all the songs, I don't have to buy them; they're all just on the playlist. And then, if you're a paid user, I can put it on my iPhone or my iPad. I'm putting it on my iPad, and I say download all those songs for offline use. Now I hook up my iPad to the stereo, and I can walk away. It just plays it. Things have really changed since, what a surprise, since 1999. We're still partying like it's 1999. We were talking to Bunny Jan.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills, California. She's getting a new MacBook Retina display. She's all Mac. So what can I do to help you?
you know, the contact list, which I use in the address book.
Yeah.
Is there any interface in a database where I can, you know, because once you make a change or you screw anything up, you know, it's gone. You know, it's.
Yeah.
It's
here's no what thing. I would do. I don't, I have given up on Apple's address book. It's kind of primitive. It's basic. They know that. And I use a new a program that you can get in the App Store called Cobook, C-O-B-O-O-K. And then what Cobook. I like Cobook a lot. And what Cobook does is it synchronizes, it gets all your contacts out of your Apple contact list, of course. But then it also synchronizes it with your Twitter and your Facebook and your LinkedIn. So, because you have databases there too, don't you?
Yes, yes.
So, and then, of course, now once you've synchronized those, and by the way, I would also, and I'll tell you how to do this in a second, add it to Google Contacts for a cloud version. So I'm going to connect it to Facebook, connect it to LinkedIn, connect it to Twitter. I'm going to make it my default address application. Then it sits in the menu bar, and it is easy. It's fast. Do you do mailing lists? What kinds of things do you do?
I do mailing, but I have... I work with animal rescue, and I have rescue people, and I work with directors, and I make notes in my address book. I have all these notes.
Awesome.
But mainly, I'm always sending out duplicate emails because it doesn't show you duplicates. Well, I did get a free app, I think, that shows duplicates. But.
Duplicates are the biggest pain in all address books, and if you have a giant address book, that can become a real problem.
Yeah, and I do. But I'll get this.
I love Cobook. It is fantastic. And then... once you have Cobook working, I would then, inside of Address Book, there's the ability to synchronize it to Google. You can add a Google Contacts account. I would do that. And then there are automatic commands to merge duplicate entries. So you don't want to just kind of... So for instance, I have 4 entries for a friend of mine named Jenny Abbey. Because it's... I don't know why. One is from Facebook, one's from LinkedIn. I don't know why. But the problem is one has their actual phone number, one has their actual email. It's spread out along those 4. So what I don't want to do is delete 3 of the 4. I want to merge all 4. And I want to do it intelligently if possible. So Cobook will do that very nicely for you. I think you'll like
it. Great. I'm all over it. Thank you, Leo. I love you.
Thank you. I love you, Bunny Jan. And good luck with the show. Babyboomerbunnies.com. Babyboomerbunnies.com. Tony, you're Belinda, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Hey, I have an HP laptop computer. It's about 4 years old. It had XP on it, and the hard drive had to be replaced, so the people that put the new hard drive in put Windows 7 on it. And now Windows 7 doesn't recognize the graphics card, which is integrated in the motherboard. It's an NVIDIA GeForce 8600 GS. When I go out to NVIDIA and it does an auto detect, it sees it, and I download the driver. But when I install it, Windows won't allow it to run. It says Windows 43, I think, is the error code, and it disables it.
You know, and now did you pay for a Windows 7 upgrade?
Yeah, I think it was bundled into the hard drive cost of that.
Okay, I would check. Because if not, at some point you're going to get a very nasty notice saying, oh, by the way, we're going to stop running soon because this is not a licensed copy of Windows.
Okay.
So I would check. Make sure that you did, in fact, that'll add $130 to the cost of the hard drive.
Well, they put the hard drive in for $160, but this is a place in a strip mall, so...
Yeah, yeah. So what happened is, the guy was being nice, I guess, and he put his copy of Windows 7 on there, probably pirated. You should check, because it may be in 30 days it'll say, what's your serial number, in which case you're kind of out of luck. So you got problem number one right there. So it's almost certainly, at that price, it's definitely an illegal copy of Windows. The other problem is, the guy did you no favors, let's put it that way. What I would do now is, it's a little tricky because you can't delete drivers for your display without getting a little bit of trouble. What I would do is restart in safe mode. That'll start up your computer in a very ugly 16-color VGA low-resolution display. It uses a generic display driver, the VGA driver. That's when you should try upgrading the driver. And I would even perhaps, before you do that, go to the device manager in Windows 7 and delete any drivers you've already got in there. You can also go, the Windows update will give you one driver, but you could also go directly to NVIDIA, or better yet, really where you should be going is to HP. HP will have drivers for this particular machine, and that's what you want. So go to HP, they have right on the front page at HP.com a drivers section. Go there and get the driver for that machine and make sure it's the Windows 7 drivers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
In my cardigan. Welcome to the land of fame excess. Whoa. Am I gonna fit in? Jumped in the cab, here I am for the first time. Look to my right and I see the Hollywood sign. This is all so crazy. Everybody seems so famous. My
little Miley Cyrus, that's on my list.
Too much pressure and I'm nervous.
Makes my kids crazy, but it's on my list. Party in America. We're going to have a big one on Wednesday. By the way, we should say they are partying in Canada. This is Canada Day. So for our Canadian listeners, happy Canada Day to you. I know it kind of gets eclipsed, unfortunately, by all the fireworks going on down under. We're down under, you know, to the Canadians. Back to the phones we go. Chris in Denver. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Chris. Oh, wait a minute. You know, have I lost control? Let me push the button this way. Yes, there we go. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. What can I do for you today?
I'm an old guy that's having a hard time keeping up with technology, but your show is a real boon for me.
Hey, you and I got a lot in common. I'm an old guy that's having trouble keeping up with technology, too.
Yeah, I'm a repair technician, and boy, I tell you, there's nothing anymore that doesn't have a couple computer boards in it.
I think the young guys are having trouble keeping up with technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, where my question is, and I'm not even sure I'm asking the right question. I found this wonderful. I'm trying to get away from my phone company. They've been taken over by criminals.
Whoa!
And I found this wonderful internet system.
Yeah.
That. Works on a 4G outfit.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
I've had that for 3 months now, and it's just lickety split, and I just love it. And I got an internet phone, and my problem is that my work computer is a Panasonic Toughbook, and I plug it into the phone line at night, and it uploads and downloads my day's work for me.
Right.
And it won't do it over the 4G, and I've been thinking it was the difference between the analog and the 4G, but
do you have on, how are you connecting the Toughbook to a 4G connection?
That might be the problem. I'm going through a magic jack.
No, it won't do anything. So you're saying the Toughbook has a modem on it? I'm very confused. Magic jack, you're using the magic jack for your phone.
Yeah, and so I'm plugging the phone line from the magic jack into it.
That won't do.
And
it.
Does
a Toughbook have a modem in it?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm sure it does. I mean, that's how it.
So in the old days, you would connect it up to your old school telephone line.
Yeah, I just. Yeah,
and
I
it
just
would go beep beep boop 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 boop, boop, boop. Like that.
Yeah, all them awful noises.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was calling a dial-up service of some kind. What number was it calling?
Always the 800 number for my company to upload my...
Got it. So your company provides a dial-in number for modems.
Uh-huh.
And you were using that to upload data to that. Does a company... Now, I bet you anything, if the company has that, they probably also have a way for you to do it over the internet as opposed to dial-in.
Okay.
So I would ask if they have a way to do that.
Okay,
I don't think the Magic Jack is digital. So here's let's see how long into this rabbit hole I want to go here. So the way a modem works, in fact, the name is a hint. It's a modulator demodulator. It takes digital data and turns it into sound. That's what
right.
The is. And on your audio phone line, it's able to use the audio bandwidth on your phone line and send those weird sounds down the line. It turns itself off, thank goodness. But if you ever left the speaker on, you'd hear, that's bits. Audio versions of bits, and that's modulated. And then on the other end, that 800 number, your company has a modem that demodulates into ones and zeros. The problem is the Magic Jack is kind of the opposite. It takes audio and turns it into bits to go over the internet. It's VoIP, voice over the internet. It isn't an audio mode, audio device.
Yeah, and it doesn't. It's not working hardly well. I did want to ask if there was maybe a internet phone that'd be more compatible to the network than the Magic Jack.
Magic Jack is designed for higher speed. Frankly, 4G is probably not ideal. Furthermore, you remember that the person providing the 4G is a phone company, and they may not. They never will admit this, but they may not really do a good job with voice over the internet because, after all, if Skype and Magic Jack worked well on their bandwidth, you might never use those expensive cell minutes.
Yeah, no, they actually aren't a phone company. I have no phone line coming in the house for the internet.
It's yeah, but the 4G, you're buying that from a Verizon or an AT&T. Oh,
I buy it from Clear, yeah.
Yeah, Clear is Sprint.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
So you're buying it from a phone company named Sprint, and Sprint... Now, they won't admit to this, but I'm guessing they probably do something called bandwidth shaping. Uh-huh. And they're not probably real fond of you using VoIP over their 4G. They'd like you to use your Sprint phone. 4G is also not that fast, right? So I would use Skype rather than Magic Jack or Vonage. Oh. I would try Skype, which is on your – it'll be – you download it onto the Panasonic and use it that way. I would also you're not going to be able to use that modem anymore. So I would ask at your company. I would say, hey, because that's old school anyway. Most computers don't have modems anymore, so they're kind of they probably would love to get rid of that thing. They probably have a better way to do it, an internet based. It's called a VPN or virtual private network that you would log into. So. You can, you know, so now the next question is, well, how do we get the Panasonic on the 4G? And there's two different ways to do this. Is that 4G thing a MiFi card or what is it? Is it a USB device you plug into the computer?
No, just plug the Ethernet.
What does a 4G look like? What is that 4G thing?
The modem, it's just a little modem has real lights to tell you how.
Oh, that's cool. So they're actually selling you a 4G modem.
Yeah, it's a 4G modem, yeah. Right.
And then it's connected via Ethernet.
To the computer, right.
To the computer, okay.
Yeah. See, and I have to go through a switch, because the Magic Jack said that you could only
Magic Jack won't work with that.
It won't?
No.
I've got another question I was curious about. I bought an Ethernet switch that it works on fairly well, but it switches back and forth, I guess, between the computer. But it does have problems at times.
Yeah, I think, what you have is a wireless router, 4G router.
Right.
And that's actually a cool device because now they make littler ones that use Wi-Fi. Does that Panasonic Toughbook have Wi-Fi on it?
No, our wireless system is a satellite system. The company's wireless system on the Panasonic goes to a satellite. And then we have satellite domes on our trucks.
I see. So the Toughbook is company provided.
Right. It's not mine. It's company provided.
Do you know if your Clear modem has Wi-Fi on it or some of them
yes,
do?
It does. I paid extra to get a Wi-Fi.
Oh, so good. Okay. So yeah. The nice thing about that Clear modem with Wi-Fi, it basically takes 4G and it has an Ethernet jack so you can connect it as you are hardwired, but you can also connect any Wi-Fi enabled device to it. So that's right. Actually probably it's and you say you're getting good results. That's a great way to get internet.
Oh, I love it. I love it because I could get rid of the phone if it wasn't for this work computer thing. And actually while I was on hold here, I got in a chat room with Clear, the company, and they said to just hook the Ethernet from the modem, hook the Ethernet directly into my computer, then I could upload, download.
Yes, that's what they're saying is the same thing I'm saying, which is
talk to your company and say, I am not using dial-up anymore. Please give me an internet-based way to get you the data.
Yeah, I haven't called the company IT yet.
Your company, believe me, they'll be happy. You're probably the last guy using it, Chris.
Yeah.
They don't want to do that. They're maintaining a dial-up connection, a phone, that's complicated. They would much rather just do it over the internet using VPN. And that's what they'll do is they'll give you a little bit of software that you run in the tough book that will connect over the internet using that Ethernet. So you don't have to do any or anything. We'll connect to your company's corporate system securely. That's why we use a VPN, because it's private, it's encrypted. It's a tunnel, an encrypted tunnel that goes to your company. And then you'll just upload the data. It'll be much faster, much more effective. It should just work fine. It should just work fine. And you can eliminate that. Now, phone calls, Matt, I don't know how well Magic Jack's going to work over that thing. So I think what you probably could do is Skype. Skype has, for a very affordable, you'll use the Toughbook as it affects your phone, although you can buy phone handsets if you really want to be old school. But I would use a Toughbook as your phone, put Skype on it. It'll use your internet connection and can call landlines if you get Skype out. It's a very good solution. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my number if you want to talk tech. I'd love to talk tech with you. 888-827-5536. We're talking about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, and Independence Day, and Canada Day for our neighbors north of the 49th parallel. 8888-ASK-LEO. Kathleen's in Rancho Cucamonga. Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Leo. I'm so happy to finally talk to you.
Yay.
I used to listen to you some 10 years ago when I lived in the Bay Area, and I was so happy to find you when I moved down here.
That's so great.
I am legally blind, and I don't know how to type, so I think technology has finally caught up to my disabilities, but I'm so confused as to what to get. My son took me to Best Buy for my birthday on Sunday, and I walked out with nothing because I just didn't know.
Oh, it's overwhelming. You're not alone. This stuff is crazy. So let me ask you what you would like to do. You want to dictate, I guess, is one thing, right? So you can write with your voice.
Well, that would be wonderful because I do write poetry and things like that, but I just want to be connected. I have friends that are on Facebook. I want to Twitter. I want to look at YouTube. I want to go to websites. So
my recommendation, now, there you can use almost any operating system with a screen reader like JAWS, but these are very expensive additional pieces of software. My recommendation for you is to go back to Best Buy or go to an Apple store and look at an iPad. iPads have built-in accessibility features. We call that accessibility, the idea that people with different abilities have the can access the contents of the software of the computer. And in Apple's accessibility, they have something called they call VoiceOver, which reads the screen to you. So this is what you need. Are you completely blind or?
No, I with high-powered magnifiers, I can read.
You have some vision. Okay. Yeah. So I would have your son take you to the Best Buy, and they have iPads or an Apple Store. Apple Store might be a little bit more friendly, although they tend to be a little more hectic in there. And now there's a couple of things that the iPad does. By the way, the software is going to be updated in a month or two, and this will make it even better for this. But the VoiceOver comes with it. In fact, I can play a little bit of it so you can hear what it sounds like. I've got my iPad in front of me, and I'll turn VoiceOver on so you can hear what it sounds like. It speaks to you, and it reads items on the screens. I'll give you some samples if I can of the VoiceOver. Oh, I have to turn my sound up. Maybe that's why I don't hear anything.
So that function is working now.
I'm turning it on now, and I'm gonna play it, and let's see if it.
Okay, button.
Okay, so I just tapped the OK button, and that's what it said.
Cancel button.
All right. I can practice on this thing, and
VoiceOver off. Settings.
All right, I'm going to turn VoiceOver on.
And we'll do some voiceover practice here so you can hear what it's.
And that's the iPad 4, the latest one that's out?
Yeah, it's actually doesn't have a number. It would be 3 if it did. It's the new iPad, they call it. It also has dictation. So if you go into email, voiceover will read you your email, and then you can respond and dictate your response. You go to a web. Yeah, I'm telling you this, you know, from the people I know who are blind who use iPhones and iPads, they're very happy to be able to use this feature.
Okay. So he was telling me there was something coming out in the fall, something added to it, voice something.
Yeah, that's what I was going to tell you about is in iOS 6 comes out, they have Siri on the iPad, and now it gets very interesting. You could say, "Where am I?" and she will tell you.
iOS 6. So I think, should I just wait for that to come out?
No, it'll be an automatic update.
So it won't matter if I get one now, then?
I would get one now. It'll be updated when it comes out. We don't know exactly when. I think it'll be fairly soon. You can zoom in on anything on the iPad, so if you have some vision, you can actually zoom in, and you might be able to even read some text on the iPad.
I get it. Oh, thank you so much.
I think the iPad is exactly right. You can get Windows, and then you'd have to buy for $1,000 more a text reading program. I just don't think that that's really worth it.
No, that doesn't sound
good. Not such a good idea.
Perfect. Thank you. I'm so happy to finally talk to you.
Oh,
thank
Kathleen,
you.
Great to talk to you. And call back if you have any issues or questions, or at least to relate your experiences for other people to hear.
I'll be happy to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
We have because it's radio, there's a lot of blind listeners. And, right? There's no pictures. This is perfect. And so I know a lot of people are very interested in hearing how well this works. Mark in Modesto, California. Hi, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, how are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm just fine. I've been listening and watching you for many years, and I was listening yesterday, and you were talking about Google Voice, and there's just something I wanted to share with you and everyone about something that I discovered about Google Voice. I'm a longtime Google Voice user back to when it was Grand Central, and
as am I, and I love it.
Yeah. Recently discovered a way to actually bridge your Google Voice account with just a regular analog phone sitting on your desk. There's a company called, it's actually a group called Obi Talk, like Obi-Wan Kenobi. OBI 110. It's called a voice service bridge, and it actually gives you a way to link your Google Voice account with Google Chat, and you simply just plug in just a regular desk line to this OB110, and when somebody calls your Google Voice account, it rings the phone on your desk.
Cool. Now, I have to say, I use Google Voice without a phone. I just have a headset connected to my laptop, and when it rings, I pick it up. But if you really attach to the idea of having a phone, and you know, as I told our caller earlier, you really like the idea of pressing a phone to your head. This is a great idea. This is the OB110. It's about $50, right?
Yeah, it's about $50. I also use it as the fax line in my office.
A nice feature, because then you can eliminate. I pay a lot of money every month for a digital fax service. This is a good idea.
I just reach over and hit the auto answer button on my fax machine. And whenever I get a fax, it just comes in. And I'm actually talking to you on my Google Voice line right now.
Sounds great.
Saved a lot of time and money, too. You know, we'll see how long that the free Google Voice number continues.
I think Voice will always be free. But right now, long-distance calls to anywhere in the U.S. and Canada are still free through the end of the year anyway. They were going to end that last year, and they extended another year. I would not be surprised if they continue to extend it.
They also have very reasonable international rates, too, like 2 cents a minute to London as well. So
this is for somebody who doesn't want to use their computer for Google Voice. This connects to your router and then to a phone, and it's kind of like Magic Jack in that sense. Well, actually, Magic Jack needs a computer, doesn't it? Or they have a new Magic Jack.
I think it's a lot better than Magic Jack.
Yeah, well, the quality is much better. It's using Google Voice's VoIP, which is very good. They use a company called Video, which does excellent voice over the internet. I mean, listen to this call. It sounds fantastic. So you would plug your Obi into the router. You'd plug your phone into the Obi. And now that phone is like a regular phone using your Google Voice phone number, which is free.
Yeah,
Mark, thank you for the suggestion. I was not aware of this. I'm ordering one right now. And I'll give it a try. What a great idea. $50. Love it. I hate to interrupt it. I don't know what it is, but I hate to interrupt it. What is that? Leo LaPointe, the tech guy. Some sort of strange Star Wars thing going on there. Our musical director, Kyle Benham, at work. He, by the way, puts a playlist together of all this stuff and puts it on his Google Plus account, plus.google.com. His name, you can add him to your circles, Kyle, K-Y-L-E, space, Benham, B-E-N-H-A-M. I'm looking at this Obi thing. Boy, this is cool. This is really cool. I just ordered one. But I ordered the 100 because it's not immediately obvious what you should get. But I ordered the 100 because... It plugs into your router, plugs in your phone line, and then uses your, somehow you'll have to, I guess, configure it with your Google Voice setup. So you have to have Google Voice, and then you can basically, you'll have a phone in your place that uses your Google Voice number, rings when your Google Voice number rings, and you can make outbound calls. TSNW in our chat room says, that's Leo's most used phrase, I just ordered one. Hey, it's my job. I got to do it. I'll give you a review next week. Jack in Florida, Leo LaPointe, the tech guy. Hey,
Hello,
Jack.
Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Not too shabby for a Monday.
The Monarch says, my second most used phrase, why did I order this?
I've got a question for you. How did you enjoy your four-bladed quadricopter?
Oh, we loved that thing. That was the AR drone, which is a helicopter. It's got, as you say, it's quadricopter, got four rotors. You fly it with an iPad or an iPhone or an Android phone, and it's smart because it just, if you don't tell it what to do, it just stays there.
Right, keep station.
It hovers. It's got some very sophisticated electronics in it. I loved it. Now, it's a little pricey. I think it was about $300.
Well, for $200 more, you can make a fixed wing or a six-bladed helicopter out of a smartphone.
Okay. Tell me how.
Okay. Well, the smartphone has a processor. It has memory. It has GPS. It has magnetometer, a gyroscope, accelerometer.
That's true. It's got all the stuff you need, doesn't it?
Exactly.
It even has a camera, which is one of the cool things about the AR drone, too.
The only thing it's lacking is the actual autopilot software, which is very...
Well, it's also lacking some blades, something to lift it.
Well, what I'm basically saying is... $500 and an iPhone.
Oh, I'm saying you embed the iPhone into your quadricopter.
You can have your own fixed-wing drone or your own rotary drone. As a matter of fact...
Now all we need is air-to-air missiles, and we've got a Predator.
As a matter of fact, you can replace all those functions on a single chip for anywhere from $10 to $17.
This is a very hot category right now. Are you into this? Are you one of the hobbyists that does drones? There's a great page, DIY Drones.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And basically, I looked at this stuff because it was in the latest issue of Wired magazine.
Yeah.
And basically, the utilities of these things is enormous. You can actually use them to deliver small packages. You know, you can...
What do you mean, deliver small packages? That doesn't sound quite right.
Well, suppose your buddy two blocks over once it needs a beer.
Hey, there's a drone outside your door. Open your door. Look, it's got a six-pack. But the lifting power on these isn't huge, right?
Well, it varies. It varies on how much trouble, how many engines, how many motors, how many rotors you want to build. There's a farmer in the Midwest that built a fixed wing. He's got 1,500 acres, and he sends his plane out to survey his land to tell him what crops need watering and when, and which ones need fertilization. So, I mean, you know, there are all kinds of different reconnaissance. For example, checking out rooftops without putting someone at any risk. Obviously, aerial photography.
It's really quite cool, and this is a very big and growing hobby. I do worry a little bit that the airspace won't get too crowded with these. Now, the difference is these are what you're talking about here are autonomous, right? Does a drone require that it fly itself, or is a drone can a drone be piloted remotely? That's a drone, right?
You can configure it to go either way.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, you can configure it so if you're wearing a smartphone on your belt, you can have the drone follow you. Basically, if you're like a kite surfer and you do a lot of stunts, and you can wear a waterproof outfit, you can have the drone follow you and keep record of your performance.
I love the idea of putting cameras on these things. I work in television. That's what intrigues me so much.
Going to suggest to you, I understand you're going to have a maker show.
We are.
Now,
I think maybe we'll just do a drone show.
Exactly.
This week in drones.
Do you know the Chinese are making these?
I'm looking at a video right now of a Chinese guy who made this in his backyard. And it's big. I mean, this thing is big enough to carry him, apparently. He's got a cockpit for it.
The smaller models are as low, as cheap as $500.
Yeah. This is a very intriguing hobby. And, you know, the FCC has started to look into regulation for these things. And
currently you can fly them over private property, uninhabited property, and you have to keep them below a 400-foot altitude.
So a drone is technically an unmanned aerial vehicle.
A UAV, and that's right out of FCS, User Combat Systems.
And it doesn't have to be for combat. It could be for six-pack delivery.
Exactly. It could be to deliver a small package. It could be, for example, now, how's this one? It could deliver pizza.
Now, what is, but isn't there a hazard with these blades flying?
Well, you can always shroud the blades.
Yeah, probably a good idea. You can't shroud them too much. They have to be open to the air so that they can move the air, though.
Yeah, the shrouds would have to be vented. But, I mean, yeah, you could prevent injury, okay?
I think a good idea. Let's make that part of the law, shall we? Drone blades must be shrouded.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even that little four-bladed job that you flew around the brick house.
That has shrouds, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I was pretty impressed because I've never done anything like this. And I was able to fly the Parrot. It's from Parrot, by the way, AR drone. And if you want to build one yourself, DIYdrones.com. Jack, what a great call. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So watch out. This guy's about to take off. This is the craziest. Only in China. This thing is pumping gas into the atmosphere. You got to do this in your classes. I think the kids would be very interested in... And here he goes. Here he goes. He's about to lift off. It's the thing is like 8 lawnmower engines. They're all 2-stroke, you can tell. I got to close that. You really wouldn't want to be in the neighborhood when he's doing this. Chris, you want to build one of these for your camera? Put your DSLR in there?
Totally. I would fly one of those in an instant.
All you need is 4 Volga motors, and you're set.
Awesome.
Oh, my God. Yikes!
This is scary. Well, he's got this huge ring around him, so I guess...
I don't know if it looks protective.
Not really.
Oh, my God, I'd wear a helmet if I were him.
It is so scary.
Oh, this is so Chinese. This is it. This is why.
Does that thing have any... Is it computerized? Does it have any gyros?
I doubt it.
It
seems like he's having trouble getting... getting some balance. And the funny thing, he's doing it like in the yard of his apartment building. You know, I mean,
of course.
There's kids. Oh, look.
Where else would he do it? This is so fun.
I love it.
By the way, Leah, do we have that thing down on the 18th of August?
Yeah, because by then I won't be doing the Gizwiz on Saturday afternoon. So as soon as the radio show's over at 2.
Oh, let's briefly bring that up so I can start building some interest on that.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful. Another photo day. This is awesome.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Never did I currently get that. This is all...
And I want you on as a guest with all your toys.
Oh, okay. I'll bring on my cameras. I have a lot of stupid, crazy, expensive cameras that I don't ever use. Yeah. I actually have a dust-free cabinet in my apartment now for just for holding expensive gear that I never use. It's great.
Yeah. By the way, I did this fix for the echo cancellation. Looking good, I think.
Yes, you fixed it. So you just did the text change.
Yes, exactly.
So it's good to know that works. That's awesome.
So that one worked.
Yep. Much better.
Much better. when these things start developing their own life.
Are you talking about drones or Skype?
Well, both. Skype is sometimes worse, especially when they start throttling it.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So we want to talk lenses today. Have you had a chance to look at the Canon 40mm Pancake?
No, that sounds good.
Yeah, it's brand new. It's all the rave. I haven't been able to touch it, but I have my thoughts on it.
All right, we'll take a look. Flying robots deliver tacos to your location.
That was a hoax, by the way, the taco thing.
Of course it's a hoax.
The lobster copper.
And on the East Coast, try the lobster copper.
Yeah.
All right, Leo, DSL Extreme Billboard.
Thank you. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Having fun. We're talking about drone copters. Just so much fun. I worry a little bit that the world is going to be full of these things flying through the air. And but it's fun. This is what's cool about this whole digital revolution we're going through the technologies involved in this stuff are cheaper and cheaper. And for some reason, people got that do-it-yourself bug. There's this kind of whole movement of making crazy stuff. We've got a land full of inventors, a world full of inventors. Speaking of inventors, Chris Marquardt is here, the inventor of the amazing string tripod.
I didn't invent that.
You won't take credit, huh?
I just found it. No, I'm not going to take credit for that. But I want one of those drones, and I want to hang cameras of that and fly around and have...
Well, we did that with the AR drone, and it's really quite beautiful. And they're smooth. They fly very smoothly. So,
yeah,
you know, the sound isn't good because they tend to be noisy. But, well, they're not that noisy.
But you still want to have a light camera, something that's...
Yeah, the inexpensive ones don't have a lot of lift. Chris
unless
is our...
Unless you get an octocopter or something with 8 blades, then...
Wow. Chris is our photo guy. He does a great podcast, Tips from the Top Floor, does wonderful photographic workshops. You can find him at chrismarquardt.com and on this show every week. And today you want to talk about lenses. Now, most of the time when you have a point and shoot, you don't really think about your lens.
Yeah, but more and more people start either getting into the what we call evil cameras, EVIL, which means electronic viewfinder, interchangeable lens cameras. Those are all the hype right now. Or into DSLRs, the even bigger ones. And just the other week, Canon brought out this new pancake lens, which are all over the place right now. You see them a lot in different areas. On the Micro Four Thirds, for example, they're pancake lens. A pancake lens is a lens that is very, very thin. So you put it on the camera.
Flat, like a pancake.
Like a pancake. It's almost like a lens, maybe an inch in depth. So Canon has just released a 40 millimeter pancake, which I find a pretty exciting
now,
lens.
Let me ask this would work on almost any Canon DSLR, including the 60D, the 70, the 5D,
absolutely.
The Rebels.
As long as it uses the EF mount, which is the standard mount right now for Canon.
How come lenses? I have a 50 millimeter lens. It's about 4 inches long or 3 inches. How can you get this so small? What are they giving up?
Well, that was the question that a lot of people had, and looking at the initial reviews, a lot of people were afraid that they would sacrifice a lot of image quality. I mean, in the end, it's kind of enough to just slap in one lens, but then you won't get good image quality because you can't correct for optical issues. So they did some magic there, and apparently the image quality is quite good. They introduced a new motor in the lens. You know, like an old lens might have a motor that goes zzz, 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 and a newer lens might have, or a more expensive lens might have what's called an ultrasonic motor, which is almost silent, very fast. And now they started introducing a stepper motor, which is a kind of a hybrid. It allows to focus that lens at different speeds. So they are kind of preparing that for videography now. So you'd be able to get like smooth focusing with that.
Well, it's also, I mean, the real reason you get this is very compact.
Well, it's one of the reasons that I think the new stepper motor is also very interesting for videographers. And with the newer Canon cameras, it's fairly silent. Yeah, it's somewhere in between the older and the USM motors, but it's fairly silent.
Now, this is not a very fast lens. It's an f2.8, so...
It's an f2.8 is quite fast, actually.
Oh.
What I like about it...
Okay.
Okay, you are used to the 1.2.
If you say so.
We're not talking about that. Well, this 40 millimeter... another reason I like it is that it is very close to what we call the normal focal length. Normally, that's like the 50 millimeter. That would be the standard kind of middle ground lens. But the 40 is actually closer to the actual normal on a full frame camera. So it's I like this just for that fact. One little issue there, potential issue. It's the focusing on that lens is a fly by wire. So you can't do mechanical focusing on it.
It doesn't have any physical thing to turn.
It has a ring, but you turn that, and that is not mechanically coupled with the focus.
Oh.
It just switches on the motor. So when you focus this lens in one direction, it kind of extends to the front a bit, and then when it's extended and you take it off, you can't retract it without power. So you have to make sure if you want it really flat in your camera bag or in your pocket, then you might want to think about that. The price point, I think, if I read it right, is fairly affordable. I think we're talking around $200 for
this
lens.
Yeah, that's what
so
Amazon.
Not really
Amazon
expensive.
Is selling it for $200.
Yeah, and it's according to the test, it's actually very, very good. So I'm definitely going to get my hands on one of those and give it a thorough test. Absolutely.
I'd love to see what the bokeh looks like on this. This probably, does it even have blades? How does it?
Oh yeah, a lens does have
has to have
blades.
An aperture blades,
wants
right?
To do different apertures. Yeah. I mean, there are different kinds of those. I haven't really seen them. Apparently, they are quite rounded, so we are looking at a more roundish opening.
Yeah.
Other lenses might have a more like a hexagonal or pentagonal opening, depending on the amount of blades. So yeah, I have high hopes. The test images I've seen from that lens look pretty promising. And it's really compact. I mean, it's kind of
remember,
funny.
If you're putting this on a big DSLR, the cameras.
It's going to look very funny, yes. But maybe that's the new black. I don't know.
Wow. Now, of course, people are not just getting DSLRs nowadays. They're getting these new mirrorless Micro Four Thirds cameras, which are a little more affordable. Everybody's making them from the Olympus, the new Olympus D, to Canon and Nikon and Sony. These Micro Four Thirds cameras, Panasonic, Fujifilm, I really like them a lot. If somebody could only get one lens, I guess they tend to come with kit lenses on all these cameras that are zooms.
They do. And
they're pretty good, right?
Yeah, they are. They are fairly okay. I mean, they're not the top of the line lenses, those kit lenses.
They're trying to keep the price down, of course.
You can get by with a kit lens for a long time. It will typically cover the most important focal lengths, the most important zoom ranges that you need. They are not the brightest lenses, but they're good and they're decent lenses. So I wouldn't be too worried about getting a new lens. I'd use a kit lens and then just work with that until you really hit some barriers, and then you will be able to ask around and get some advice on where to go. I get this question a lot. What other lens should I buy? I got this camera for Christmas and I need another lens. I'm not very specific usually because it's really hard. It kind of depends on what you want to do. But I typically tell people get something more in the telephoto range. If you go wide angle, that'll make composition really, really difficult because all of a sudden you have lots of things in the picture that compete for attention. If you go more into telephoto range, you can zoom into things and kind of get cleaner pictures this way because you have less in the picture. And those pictures are typically the more appealing ones. So go telephoto, a slight little telephoto range, maybe 80 millimeters, 100 millimeters, 150 in that range will be pretty much a good choice.
Chris Marquardt talks about photography on his own podcast, Tips from the Top Floor, and also does great workshops. He's going to come out here. You're coming out to the U.S. Is that to do some workshops? You do this every summer.
I do this every summer. I'll be back in San Francisco in August, and I'll stop by the Break House.
We're going to do a photo day August 18th, right after the radio show. That's a Saturday. Chris will come in here and we'll spend a lot of time with other photographers, do a whole photo. I love doing that. Can't wait. ChrisMarquardt.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Boy, I had my finger hovering on the buy button on that one. I don't know. Let me look at, I should go to Flickr and see if anybody's, Flickr, you can select or search by
seen,
a camera.
As I
I've
walk
seen really
around
good
everywhere.
Reviews. If you check out the review at lensrentals.com, they usually have pretty good reviews, and they get lots of units in. So they have a few, and they tested them, and they say good things about it.
So I haven't heard anything about it. That's amazing.
It's not going to compete with a 50. With your 50, maybe on weight and size, but
I guess I don't really need it since I'm, you know, the 5D is already heavy.
But maybe that'll make you take it with you more. 5D.
Yeah, I rarely take it with me because it's so heavy.
I just read this article of a photographer. He owns a 5D, and he then got the iPhone 4 or 4S, and then
he didn't take the DSLR
with him. But now he's back on the DSLR. He's back on it because he got the Retina MacBook Pro, and he put iPhone 4S pictures on the screen, and they look horrible
screen. He's right.
So he now needs better image quality. He says, obviously, in terms of portability, nothing's better than just your mobile phone. But right. In terms of image quality, if you look at them on a really good screen or really big, you will see a difference. So he's back to his DSLR full time now. So
there you go.
Everything comes with a price tag.
I'm kind of with him. In fact, I had to download all new wallpapers on the Retina, because all my wallpapers that I'd been perfectly happy with for the longest time looked terrible.
They get up-rezzed to that size.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, I did benefit because now I'm using the same wallpapers from Interfacelift on all my computers, and all of the desktops look so much nicer than they used to.
Ooh,
and most of them are 5D pictures.
Did you take those pictures?
No, and that's the thing. If I would just... Instead of being so, that's this is the stock.
That's right? A nice one. You took that's that, right?
This, no, this is yeah. This is yeah. Sure, I did.
If the 51.2.
Yeah, if I just that's interesting. When spaces, does it use different desktops? For
I think
every
you can
space?
Give it just different backgrounds. Yes, you can do
that's
that.
Interesting. So these are all from, most of them are 5D pictures. If I would get around to processing my gosh, yeah, see, look at that. My gosh darn pictures. I would have better pictures here. There's another one. All right, Chris.
We can do a Lightroom lesson on photo day.
I know. Well, I'm using Aperture because I want the Retina display. Uh-huh. Now you have to use Aperture because Adobe hasn't updated Lightroom.
It'll happen.
As soon as they do, I'll go back because I don't like Aperture very much. All right, Chris, thank you.
All right.
Take care.
Talk to you next week.
Chris Marquardt, everybody. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Benham's Musical Mashup Company. How may I help you? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. A little Steppenwolf plus, what is it, Apocalypse Now in the background? 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Or you can always use Skype out or your OB and call us if you're outside the U.S. Let's see here. Next is Dave in Michigan. Hi, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Good. I have a problem with Outlook.
Okay.
And when I'm forwarding emails, I get these emails that say they've been sent around a dozen times, and they get kind of crowded.
Yeah. Okay. That's the quote depth. They keep going in and in and in and in and in. And because as everybody forwards it, it gets what we call quoted, which means it slides it over to the right a little bit. So by the time you get the email with 15 forwards, the whole darn message is slid over to the right, right?
Right. Well, yeah. When I get those, I take and copy and paste them.
Good man.
Cleans it up and puts everything right back where it originally was.
Yep. Get rid of all that silly stuff.
Right. And I take all the email addresses out and I'll send it out.
Now, you see, boy, I wish more people were like you, Dave. First of all, I hate being on these forward lists, but I know it's like one of the things. As soon as people get a computer, the first thing they start doing is forwarding cute jokes and pictures and stuff. And I just hate it, but I don't want to offend my friends. But I think if you're going to do it, it's a nice thing to do is to take the, because the email addresses stay in there, take them out, and to cut it down. So you're, that's a nice thing to do. I think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I take all the quotes, anything that people added. I try to figure out what's the original statement.
Right,
Joker,
right.
And then send it back out. But what happens now, when I because I don't use, I send it out singly. You know, I don't have right. a group that I send it to.
Good.
And because I'm selective. But when I get to the third.
Well, I wish you were on my mailing list, Dave. This is the, you're doing everything right.
I, well, when I get to the, about the third person, it starts flashing between sending and the outbox. And it won't let you send or receive or do anything. And I got a little work around that. It's called Alt, Clear, and Delete. And I hit it, it stops. And then I can send it out again for about two or three. But it only does it on corrected emails. If I got that email.
Yeah, because it's trying to keep you from, I think what it's trying to do is keep you from spamming.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I have a feeling. I actually haven't seen this behavior. Maybe somebody in the chat room could tell me. But my guess would be once you've got more than three or four of the same message in your outbox, that Outlook's saying, yeah, come on, hold on there. It's trying to keep you from spamming people. So as soon as you modify the message, Outlook says, oh, that's a different message. Okay.
Yes, but if I took that same mail and sent it out, I could go up. I only go up to nine times because Comcast.
They don't want you to send spam either, right? They're watching you carefully, right. Yeah.
So, and send it. If I did that, send it without amending it, it'll go right through.
Microsoft talks about this. Somebody in the chat room has given me a link to a Microsoft forum post. Outlook 2010 blinks or flickers when you're trying to, it's constantly losing and regaining. And apparently this is something that the Outlook connector does. Do you have the Outlook connector installed? Do you know what that is?
No, I don't.
Doesn't sound familiar.
Mine is 2007, and on Google, 2010 does it too.
Yeah. Are you using Hotmail?
No, I use Comcast.
Okay. The Outlook connector allows you to use Hotmail. And so that's one of the ways that this could happen. Apparently, that's not what's going on with you, however. So I don't know. I would guess that it's interesting that when you modify the file a little bit, it doesn't blink anymore. And I have a feeling that that's probably what's going on. Here's what I would suggest you do. You can mail that once using BCC. You know about CC, and you're clearing those CCs right. out. But if you put all of the addresses for that single email in the BCC folder, no one else will see those emails, just the the addresses, just you. And you can send that same message more than nine times, just doing it that way, and you won't get the blinking, and Comcast won't complain.
So are you headed back?
Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I never send it out in a group, any of my emails.
Well, you could. This would save that problem instead of sending it one by one.
Single because I want to make sure I never offend anybody, you know, by sending a group. Oh, I don't like this.
I don't blame you, but you could still, just the same way you're doing it individually, instead of set, you just one by one, you put the addresses of the people you want in the BCC field. You don't have to use a group. You could do it manually.
Yeah, it never does it unless I alter it. If I change,
well, I would try it in the BCC field. Then you only have to send it once. And you shouldn't have that problem. There is a known problem with the Outlook connector for Hotmail that does exactly that. It's called losing focus, and it's very frustrating, where the program wants to flip over to another thing, even though your focus, where you're clicking the mouse, is, you know, is on the send button. All of a sudden, it flips over somewhere else without your permission. You want to send it to the blind carbon copy. That is, no one can see. Instead of sending nine emails, put nine email addresses in BCC. You can pick them by hand. You don't have to do a group. And then you won't have that problem, right? Lynn in San Diego. Hi, Lynn.
Hey, Hey, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for doing what you do. I really get a kick out of listening to you, and I learn so much when I'm bebopping around down here on the weekends.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Listening on KOGO down there in San Diego.
That's right.
Coco.
That's right.
Yep.
So, I am in the first wave of the baby boomer generation, and I'm retired, and I really don't want to be buying a computer, you know, every 2 or 3 years, but I'm getting the idea that that's what one has to do.
Well, you look at the way Apple's designing its computers. For instance, the new MacBook Retina display or the iPad, they don't have replaceable batteries. Now, that new Retina Mac, you can only charge it 1,000 times before that battery stops working. I think that's building in obsolescence, isn't it?
Yeah. So here's my dilemma. My first computer was a Gateway, and that lasted 8 years.
Well, now, this I must say, you are remarkably frugal, Lynn.
Well, I wasn't using it that much then because I was a working girl then.
You know, I've been trying to figure out, you know, they say every human year is 7 dog years. I've been trying to figure out what the equivalent is on computers, and I think it's really kind of close to maybe 30 years. So an 8-year-old computer is 240 years old.
Man, that's scary.
Let's talk some more about this when we come back. I got to take a break. Can you hang on? All right, Lynn. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming right after this. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. We were talking to Lynn in San Diego. Her last computer, she kept her last laptop for 8 years. Now she's got a 4-year-old laptop. And are you wondering whether it's time to upgrade, Lynn?
Actually, they're desktops.
Oh, desktops. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, desktops tend to last longer than laptops. Laptops get kind of banged up over time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a 4-year-old Dell with Vista on it. And I did take it into a reputable family business that helped me before. And they cleaned it up. They actually had 2 guys look
good,
at it.
Good.
I was unable to get my Windows updates. And even though I have the Norton 360 program on it, they said I had a bunch of viruses. But yet, it still keeps freezing.
And did they, when they cleaned it up, did they start over or did they just remove the viruses?
You know, I don't know.
Yeah. One would hope that they did the right thing, which is to reformat the drive, reinstall Windows, restore your data to the drive and your apps. I bet they did not.
Okay. So they had to reformat
the drive. Yeah, and they don't want to do this because it's a pain, but it's the only way. Think about it. Once you have malware on your system, it's really people perhaps have the mistaken notion that it's possible to detect all malware. It is not.
Okay.
And so the assumption is that you've detected it and are effective at removing it all. But unfortunately, once a system has been compromised, as yours was, it's probably not safe to trust it. And the only way you can trust it again is to completely wipe the hard drive and reinstall from a known good source.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So my suggestion would, and by the way, doing that will, you see, if you're having freezes and things like that, it could be a hardware problem. But we won't really know until we do that. If you've completely fresh install of the operating system, done all the updates, then put your data and the apps, only the apps you really use, back on. Don't put everything on, just the apps you really use. And you're still getting freezes, then it's probably, then it may be that there are some hardware issues. But it sounds more like if they found malware, what people tend like to do, and I have this argument a lot with wise guy computer techs. Oh, no, I'm good. I can remove every bit of malware today. I can make that thing as good as new. It's no problem. Look at that. It's perfect. The problem, there are twofold. One is that you can't be sure you've removed everything. And two, in the process of removing things, you may have damaged the operating system. Good malware, well-written malware, which most of it is these days, attaches to system files. So removing it often damages the system. So I would say that they probably didn't do a good job. of cleaning it. Now, I know it puts you in an awkward position, Lynn, because they're your experts.
Yeah, and they've been in business for like 15 years.
Yeah, well, that doesn't mean much. I would ask them, have you asked them about the freezing?
Yeah, that was the main reason I took it in. And he said, well, you know, it could be a lot of other things. He said, you know, are you using a wireless mouse? I said, yeah. He said, well, try switching that over. So I did. He said, what about your printer? Is that old? I said, well, yeah, it's about the same age.
When does it freeze? How does it freeze? Tell me about that.
It'll freeze during anything. Just now, while I was on hold with you, I was typing an email, and it shut down.
Oh, wait a minute. What do you mean shut down?
Well, the cursor froze while I was typing the email.
Okay, so now this is different from what I was understanding. So it's not just hesitating. It's not just like, it's actually not working anymore?
Right.
And then what do you do?
Well, I have to manually shut it down.
The guy's an idiot. Please don't take it back to him.
Oh. Okay.
You know, that could be your mouse there, lady. I think you should try a wired mouse. The wireless mouse could be freezing the entire computer. No. Well, you got Cliff Clavin working on your computer? Now, here's the deal. I can see what the problem is here. There's no way. It's very simple. It's your bit pump is overwhelmed there. We got to lubricate the... No. No, if it's freezing, it's bad. That's bad. That's not supposed to happen.
I knew you would help me.
Yeah. So it is not the wireless mouse. I'm sorry. Here's a couple of questions. He should really have said, "Well, bring it in. Let me look at it." Okay. What? If it could be the wireless? Well, if the wireless mouse battery died, the mouse would freeze, but the computer would still be running. But you wouldn't know because your mouse didn't move. Does the keyboard stop working?
Yes.
Everything stops. Does the clock stop ticking? Does it time? Yeah. So the computer is frozen solid. It's sometimes hard to tell. You know, it's true. I'll be nicer to the guy. If it were a wireless mouse, the battery died, and the pointer stopped moving, but the clock kept moving and you could still type, then it would be a wireless mouse. But if the whole thing is frozen solid, like the clock's not moving, you can't type into the thing, it's just rot. And the only way to get it back is to turn it off manually. That's a hard crash. And that probably is a hardware problem. It could be software, it could be a failing hard drive, but more likely it's overheating or a power supply problem. And this is hard to diagnose. I would say that you need to bring in the computer to somebody. You might try another. Yeah, you might try somebody else. It's hard. This is a really hard problem because, unfortunately, there really aren't any computer experts anymore. And you go, where are you going to go? Best Buy? I mean, what are you going to do? It's kind of tough.
Yeah.
You need to find an actual accomplished computer expert, like, you know, somebody who really cares about you and cares about what's going on. And the problem is it can take time to figure this stuff out. It does sound like when you get a freeze like that, it sounds like it's overheating or the power supply might have a problem with it. Because what's happening there is the hardware is crashing so hard that it can't even give you a blue screen of death or anything. It's just, I can't move. I'm frozen.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, then he said, well, you know, do I have a phone next to it? Which I did, but the phone's been next to it the full 4 years.
Lady, are you keeping that computer in a house there? Is that in a house? Is it in a room on a desk there? Is that what you're doing there? Is it plugged into the wall there? Because that could be a real problem there. What the? Of course it's in a... What is... Yes, it's near a phone. What is he saying? That the phone is freezing the computer? Yeah, yeah. The guy's...
I looked at him and said, you know, nothing has changed.
Lady, you're not using that computer in the summertime, are you? Because that's a terrible thing. What are you, only using it in months without the letter R, okay? You know, that's the only thing you can do there. I think really that there's really the guy is just throwing stuff, in the wind.
Yeah.
You need to bring it to. I don't understand why he's not saying, bring it in. Let me look at it. Because that's what he needs to be doing.
He got two shots at it. He had it for 4 days changes each time. Yeah. So
okay, that's enough. That's nice family-run business, 15 years in the business. I'm sure he's a wonderful fellow. Maybe get somebody who knows what he's doing.
Okay, Leo.
I'm sorry, but that's, you know, if you, that's kind of crazy. Is it near a phone? What? Yeah, yeah, well, that's a problem.
There's also a TV in the room.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And.
your initial question is good. Is it is 4 years old, you know, on death's door? No, it shouldn't be. It should be fixable. I think he wants to wipe the hard drive. He wants to reinstall Windows. Might as well upgrade to Windows 7 at this point, which is a lot better, a lot more reliable, a lot more secure than Windows Vista.
Okay.
And then I would have you look a couple of things. The power supply, for sure. Open it up. Make sure it's clean. There's not a blanket of dust that the fans are working. This could just be overheating. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That is the worst cover of that song I have ever heard.
You can thank Jim Carrey, the cable guy.
Oh, that's the cable guy. No wonder it's so awful.
I can barely hear you.
Do not let him work on your computer either.
All right.
And with some speculation, it might actually be a sheep singing, but I don't know. Kathy, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kathy.
Well, hi. How are you, Leo?
I am well. How are you?
We're just great today. Thank you. I'm so glad to be talking to you. I was in the car this morning. I was thinking about a project and that I probably need to hire a consultant to give me advice. And then I'm like, call Leo.
I'm free if you can get through to me. But so I'm glad you got through. Well, so what is it you want to do?
Well, here's what I want to do. On Sunday afternoons, I go with a group of people to visit a memory care unit at a senior center. And everybody says, Alzheimer's. Yeah.
That's great. Good for you.
We all saw this viral video. You might have seen it too. Oliver Sacks was in it a few weeks back, where a man who really wasn't communicating anymore because of dementia, his family was visiting him and he really wasn't recognizing them, and they put a headset on him. And he heard Jeff Holloway and he started talking.
Oh, isn't that neat?
Oh, yeah. It was moving. So we thought, you know what? Let's get some kind of sound system, music playing system for this center.
Oliver Sacks, who's a brilliant neurologist and psychiatrist, says that all of the Alzheimer's patients he's ever worked with, or anybody with dementia, all of them respond to music. He says this is especially true of old songs and songs they once knew. What a nice idea.
And, you know, we go there. It's a group from my church. We sing the oldest hymns we know. They can't talk. They know those words.
Music hath charm to soothe the savage breast.
That's exactly. Yeah, exactly. So what we're kind of hoping to do is to get a system that will have speakers maybe in a couple of rooms. We want something that's low installation.
Yeah.
I got a good
solution, but it's not cheap, and I wish it were less expensive, but the key is when you just said multiple rooms.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't be such a big deal to get an inexpensive pair of speakers, attach it to an iPod or an iPhone or some device with music on it, and play it into the speakers and move it around from room to room. But if you want a system that goes across multiple rooms,
okay,
you want a wireless audio system, my recommendation, and maybe you can get a grant to pay for this, maybe the home will pay for it, is Sonos, S-O-N-O-S.
Okay.
And I don't know of anything as good at a lower price. I mean, this just really is the way to do it, but brace yourself. So it connects to the internet, by the way. Do they have internet access there?
You know what? I doubt it. This is a center that doesn't have very many frills.
Okay, this might not be a good solution. It doesn't require the internet, but if you have the internet, you can use internet.
Okay.
But what it does, it makes its own wireless network, so it doesn't need internet. The least expensive speakers that they offer are $299, but they'd be more than adequate per room.
Mm.
$300 per room. And then you'll need one bass unit for it. that you could plug the source in, which could be an iPod or an iPad. They make a dock that would work just fine. It's called the Sonos Bridge. Is that it? No, it's called the Sonos Dock. I'm sorry. That you dock your iPhone or iPod into, and then the music you're playing there will play throughout each room. Each room could have its own music as well, individual music, which sounds like you might want that. I mean, the easiest thing...
Either way. I mean, we're thinking maybe two or three rooms, probably, or maybe just two. And the option of maybe wireless a headset, so that if somebody was having a real specific type of experience, and they would need, you know...
Headphones are a nice touch because, yeah, sometimes it closes out the confusion in the rest of the room, and it really centers them into themselves.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a way to do this cheaper.
Yeah.
That's awfully expensive.
Just so you know, we do have somebody who's offered to pay for it, but I need to give some options dollars-wise so that we're not just blowing the budget, the $299, that's not out of the question. I mean, we could do that.
That's per room. That's per speaker system. And then you need one more. Now, unfortunately, this is not going to... I don't think they have headphone connects on the back of them. Let me look and just see.
Okay.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? But you could do that with what the easiest thing to do would be, for less than that, is to get a small iPod Nano. What's the cheapest iPod? $49. And a pair of decent headphones. And that total would cost under $100. And you could then just bring it to whoever and put the headphones on, and they could listen.
Yeah.
Do you want to have a bunch of people listening to the same thing at the same time?
Well, most of the time when we get there on Sunday afternoons, they're listening to some music on like a boombox.
Right.
And so we wanted a better system for them. And one that could go past just that activity room where they're all sitting. You know, there's some folks out front, and there's, you know what I mean? So a couple different rooms with the same music. And then just maybe a separate, like you said, iPod Nano with some headphones. That could just be separate.
That could be programmed with a variety of different playlists, one per person. Logitech makes something called the Squeeze Box, which is also, but see, I think this uses Wi-Fi. So this is a little bit more tricky because you'll have to set up a Wi-Fi network. This is why I like Sonos. It doesn't actually require Wi-Fi. It has its own network in effect.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. The $400 Sonos, the Play 5. So there's a next step up that does have a headphone jack on it. So you could also have people listening on headphones on that one.
Oh, okay. Oh, I love it. Okay.
Yeah. So Sonos has a whole system. Sonos. The quality is very nice on the high-end system. I mean, so that you'd put in the much better than a boombox. You'd put that, one of those, in the bigger room.
Yeah.
And then somebody could plug in with headphones to that.
Okay.
And then you do need a base station. And then you control the Sonos with software on your iPhone or Android phone or your iPad.
That's great.
Yeah. So then somebody can sit there and control it. I'm a big, I mean, I have Sonos everywhere. We even have Sonos throughout our studio here.
I like the sound of that. And I took your advice on the View Zone camera, and you were right. Those are easy.
They're cool, aren't they? Yeah. Nope. No wires. Yeah. This is also a wireless solution. Now, if you have internet, which is what I use it with, you can use it with a variety of music services like Pandora. You could put, 40s oldies on. They have a 40s oldies station and just let it go all day, and they'd probably be in heaven.
That's true.
But that for that, you need internet access.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's true. I might be able to solve that. I'll look into both ideas because I like the idea of like satellite radio or whatever, something.
Yeah. An internet radio like the Logitech Squeezebox would be a very good choice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for doing that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Talking with the chat room about a good solution for our caller. Really great idea. She wants to bring Alzheimer's patients music. It turns out that people suffering with dementia and Alzheimer's respond very well to music from their youth. There's something about it, and I'm not surprised. It taps some emotional chord, And it's just very effective in calming them and making them feel good. Not a surprise. So she's looking for a way to bring music to this treatment center without putting in wires and a lot of infrastructure. Of course, the cheapest thing to do, and not a bad way to go, it would be just to get a, you know, three or four iPod Nanos with either little speakers. Well, you can spend as much on the speakers as you want. If you want to get really loud, good sound, probably not necessary. Audio Engine makes a great, really great sets of speakers and subwoofers, powered speakers. You'd need powered speakers to work with a Nano, or you could have headphones. You know, if you've got four or five Nanos with a set of speakers, we're not going to be costing too much money here. Maybe that whole setup, $100, $150 bucks each. If you want something that's more sophisticated, that you can control remotely, that you can play different sounds in different rooms, things like that, the Sonos system is just really great. Big fan of the Sonos systems. They're expensive, though. They're not inexpensive. But it is what I use here. We have, in the Brick House Studios, our Tech Guy Labs here, six or seven Sonos speakers. And it's great because I saw a tweet from one of my staff members, Alex Gumpel, who was here last night blasting music on the Sonos system. He said, I think I'll just stay tonight. I'll keep working because it sounds so good. I have Sonos at home, too. I love it. I have it everywhere I go. I set it up. It's worth it. But it isn't inexpensive, I have to admit. Back to the phones we go. Let's see who's been holding on the longest. Looks like it's you, Ted, in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hi, Ted.
Thank you, Leo. I have been. Can you hear me?
I hear you great.
Great. Unfortunately, I'm talking through an iPhone, so it never works too well. But anyway, I'm calling about something which I thought was a very different take on the New York Times article. In that New York Times article about the Apple workers, there was some detailed reporting about the actual conditions in the Apple store.
Yes, it was a front page article in the Sunday Times last Sunday.
I'm referring to that. And what I'm talking about is the fact that in that article are a lot of details about the increasing time pressure that the repair people are put under. The reason I mention this is that we have a small business here, and we also all work for consulting and other firms, so that our laptops are almost half Mac and half Lenovo. And what we have found over the last decade is a definite decrement, particularly in the Apple Store service. And I think the article gives a clue to why this might be true. And I think it's not a small matter, because I think a lot of the surveys about service are lagged because people ask the wrong questions or think about the wrong things. You know, do people smile?
Well, tell me about your experience, because it's not been my experience, but I'd like to hear what your experience is with the service you've been getting from Apple.
Well,
I will agree with you that on the PC side, every single PC manufacturer has completely degraded their service and support, and it's for one reason only, the price pressure. PCs are considerably cheaper, and what the response from all of these companies was, well, we're going to unbundle support. We're not going to give you very good free support. We can't afford to at that price. Meanwhile, Apple continues to charge 50 to 100% more, and a lot of that cost goes, I believe, to better support. And my experience has been the support is very, very good, but I'd like to hear what your problem has been.
Okay, well, first of all, I would ask you to consult Paul Theriot on the
I should mention that Paul Theriot does a Windows show.
No, I know. On the Lenovo support. The Lenovo support has not degraded.
Oh, interesting. All right.
The Apple support, when you send it in, has not degraded. I don't think so. I think that when on those two top companies, when you send the stuff in, it's done right. They don't ask a lot of bullshit questions. You know, the sort of thing that try to blame the user. What did you do wrong? Blah, blah, blah. Apple used to be, you know, when you went in the store, you got the same kind of service. If they couldn't deal with it, they'd send it, as when you sent it off. I'm distinguishing when you send it off versus when you bring it into the Apple Store.
Well,
and by the way,
I'll be honest, Ted. I read this New York Times article. I thought it was a hit piece. The people I've talked to who work at Apple stores agree that it is hard work, that you are very busy. I'm going to read, I presume, the only part in which they talk about service is in this paragraph. Arthur Zarate, who joined Apple in 2004 and later worked as a technician in the store in Mission Viejo. So this is pretty old stuff. says his training left him with a sense of ownership and pride. For a while, he loved the job. Remember, this is a guy who started 8 years ago, in large part because it delivered the simple and gratifying sense he was helping people. There were time constraints on technicians, 20 minutes per customer, but because the store was rarely swamped, he usually had more time than that. He had begun to sour on the job when in 2007 his store began an attendance system where employees accumulated a point for every day they did not come to work. Keep going through here. This is ridiculous. This is a hit piece. The primary point of this piece is that Apple doesn't pay its employees enough because they make $473,000 per employee. The guy who wrote it, it's a good thing that the New York Times doesn't compensate that way. He would be docked pay because the New York Times has been losing money for years. It doesn't work that way. A company pays you not based on how much you make the company ever, but on how much it would cost to replace you. Because there are long lines for people to work at Apple stores, Apple pays a normal retail salary. Technicians had always been able to spend a few hours of their shift in the repair room, providing a little away from customers' time. A few hours. In many stores, that ended. Walk-in demand for tech help was so great that when the bar was open, management at these stores decreed it was to be staffed by any technician in the building. Yeah, right, exactly. If you ran a store, do you want the technician sitting in the back room away from customers or manning the store? Oh, how horrible that Apple would require that. I'm sorry. I don't buy it. I think Apple's support in-store and out is superb. Everybody I talk to agrees. Yes, it is a tough job, as all retail jobs are. Retail's tough. I've worked retail. It's tough. But they get paid comparable salaries to other retail employees. And there's a long line of people who want the job. I just think this is a hit piece. I just don't understand why it was on the front page of the Sunday Times. Times has, by the way, for some reason, been publishing hit piece after hit piece on Apple. Now, look, I'm not an Apple fan. In fact, I'm happy to criticize Apple. They just did an appalling thing. They got a court to prevent sales of the Galaxy Nexus phone in the U.S., claiming that it violated their patent. Clearly an anti-competitive move having nothing to do with the patent. I mean, I'm not saying Apple is a sterling company by any means, but I don't think the experience, and I've heard from many Apple employees since this article, by the way, I don't think the experience of Apple employees is any different from any retail employee, whether you work for The Gap or Walmart. It's normal. It's not a sweatshop. Anybody who calls it that obviously has never seen a sweatshop. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, let's see here. I should take a few more calls before I get too much embroiled in this Apple thing. How about Carl in San Bernardino? Hi, Carl. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. My question is, I have a MacBook Pro and the older iPad, and I'm thinking about selling my MacBook Pro and just upgrading my Mac or my iPad. And I was wondering what your thoughts on that would be.
Well, it really depends on what you do. I mean, the new iPad is very capable. You can dictate to it. Although I think I see a lot of people buying keyboards, and that would be the biggest difference, right? Well, there's two big differences. One, a laptop, besides having a keyboard, also has windowing. So you can have two windows side by side. And I think it's one of the reasons I recommend real laptops for students is what if you're writing a paper and you have your research materials? You don't want to have to flip back and forth between windows. You'd like to have them side by side. And that's what a real laptop like the MacBook lets you do. You can only do full screen on the iPad. But that's okay if all you're doing is surfing an email. And, I recommend, it's $100, the Logitech Ultra Thin iPad case and cover. It doubles as a cover for the iPad, and then when you open the iPad up, you slot it in using the magnets on the iPad into the keyboard, and it really turns it almost into a laptop. Now the only disadvantage, is the windowing disadvantage. And if the stuff you do doesn't require having you know, multiple windows side by side, I think that that's a reasonable thing. You know, before you do it, you should probably try it with your iPad 1. See if you can get by a week without an iPad 1, without a laptop.
Yeah. My biggest concern is that, you know, I think that a lot of stuff is going internet now. Like if you had something you wanted to download onto your computer.
You can't do that on an iPad. I mean, well, you sort of can, but the iPad has no file system that you have access to, so you can't just, like, download files. But that's one of the reasons the iPad's better, right? It's more secure. Everything is an app. And if you right. get an emailed PDF, you have to open it in something that can read PDFs. Now, in the iPad's case, iBooks will do it, and there are all third-party PDF apps as well that can open them up. So what happens, you open it in the email, and you know this because you have an iPad, and you send it to an application that can read it, but you do not have access to the downloaded file ever. So that is a little bit of a weird, you know, it's really, it discommodes people who are used to PCs, who are used to computers. To people who've only used iPads, they go, well, what's the problem? You just don't, you know. So I would say this, the best way to do this, Carl, you got the iPad already. Put that MacBook in the closet, put it in a drawer, and don't use it for a week and see how you feel. The iPad 3 is not that much different from the iPad 1. If you're comfortable with the iPad 1 doing that, I think you'll be good. I think for students, I think having a real keyboard and having windowing is important. Having a file system is important. A lot of schools, though, are using tablets now. They're a lot cheaper than laptops. I guess that's why. But I you know, I've tried it. I need a laptop. I really do. 8888 Ask Leo. And, you know, Apple's saying, hey, we're in a post-PC world. This is the future. These tablets are the future. The iPad is what everybody will be using, and everybody except people who have some kind of hardcore pro needs. I'm not sure I agree. I'm not sure I agree. We'll take one more call. Let's see who's next here. Carl, I did you, so it would be John and Yorba Linda. He wants some video editing software for Windows. I have some recommendations before we... Yorba Linda, John, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, John?
I can't complain. You know, before I ask my question, I'm actually going to help you with something that came up while I was on hold. I heard you, of course, the program while I was on hold.
Yeah.
And just as a little background, I'm a plastic surgeon. I do a little blogging. I've got a little blog, cosmeticsurgery.com, and I cover, amongst other things, because not all I do is cosmetic, wounds in patients like Alzheimer's patients, nursing home patients, that kind of business.
Yeah.
But what you had a caller asking a little while ago was whether she was trying to figure out a way to get music to the patient.
Right.
And what you may not be aware of and what other people may not be aware of either is that some of these nursing homes have PC platforms running near the patient's bed. They actually have them in the rooms.
So kind of, the hardware, kind of so they can keep notes and things like that, yeah.
Well, not just that, but access to lab results, et
right,
cetera.
Right.
More in the long-term acute hospitals as opposed to formal nursing homes. But these types of patients find their way around the system, and they, at times, might be in institutions in which the hardware to run, say, a web-based program like Pandora.
Wouldn't that be great?
And they could get the music that way.
That's a great idea. Now, I would hope that most of those computers are very carefully connected, if at all, to the internet, because, of course, huge risk of security and privacy and so forth. But if they are connected to the internet...
Do it anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of software they must run in order to fulfill requirements in the way of being HIPAA compliant.
Yeah, I mean, just imagine. So, but if they can get Pandora, you're right. Pandora, there's another one that I just found that I love, Songza, which is free, songza.com. And they have like 50s playlists, 40s playlists. And I think for a lot of these patients, it would be
And it would be very easy to serve a number of different tastes and do it without having the hardware expense, which I believe was what the issue was before.
Yeah, very good point. If they've got a PC, that's a good way to do it.
But nevertheless, my question was primarily with regards to Windows, a Windows-based editing program. I've, in part, in serving the desires of the people on my little mini audience on my blog, I've been starting with video and basically cutting it up, making YouTube things out of it, posting it. But the problem has been trying to find a reasonable editing platform that runs on Windows that isn't a total pain in the neck to run or doesn't cost a zillion bucks. So do you have any suggestions in that regard?
Yeah, there's a free one. If you have Windows, a late model version of Windows, live.com. I would get Windows Movie Maker. It's free from Microsoft, and it's pretty darn good. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.